Hey, amigos, you know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Please help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. And if you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in, give me a thumb. Say hello while you're at it. It helps me a ton with the algorithm. And besides, it's real nice to see you there. And now, on to the show. Alright, welcome friends. Hey, I'm sure glad to see you again with all that's going on. Christmas right around the corner, an alien invasion in New Jersey, and all the hubbub about the new Splittail Files book taking over the nation. Damn straight. Jump on that train if you haven't already. I'll tell you, the New York Times people are just beating down our doors asking for permission to put it on the bestseller list. I just told them to get lost. We're too cool for those big city pencil pushers. Whatever, Chester. Yeah, I guess they could have been Jehovah's Witnesses. But that was probably just a front to get access to me. Who the hell knows? And remember, if you leave a review on the Splittail Files, we'll read it on the show. I've already got one for you later. Alright. Hey, also, check out simplyscarypodcast.com. $7.99 a month and you'll get our whole catalog ad-free. What a gift for the holidays, right? Just hit the Patrons button at the top of the screen, steal all of Craig's content, and make out like a bandit. Become a patron today. Alright, so tonight's story is brought to you by our old friend Rory Duane. In it, a dead detective works the eternal winter streets of the nameless city, where enchanted weapons are turning up dead bodies, proving that even the deceased can die twice. So, without further delay, from author Rory Duane, I give you The Death Patrol. Red and blue fluorescent lights lit up the dreary scene. The Christmas tree had set fire to the apartment. Cindered presents wrapped beneath the black pine like some demon fire god's droppings. Hank held the cloth to his mouth and nose, blocking out, or at least attempting to, the fetid smell of burnt flesh. You'd think a dead man wouldn't mind death, but there you go.
"She was dead before the fire,"
he muttered, more to himself, once again stating the obvious to his partner in crime. Saul sucked his teeth.
"You think?"
He glanced down at the butcher's knife protruding from her chest. He fingered the pistol on his belt, a sure sign he held misgivings. Hank looked close at the knife's pommel and found it engraved with archaic runes.
"Enchanted," growled Hank.
"That's the second this week," added Saul.
"Sure as shit, the chief's gonna flip his lid."
Hank stood and rested his hands on his belt. The radio on his belt hissed static, the storm outside doing its job of straining their only connection to base. He picked it up and listened. As the monotonous voice droned through the airwaves, Hank felt tingles brush up and down his spine, like someone was walking over his grave, which just might be true.
"This is Detective Jones. Run that by me again,"
he called into the radio.
"Moonlight thieves on the lonely mountain."
The voice still gave him the heebie-jeebies, even after almost three centuries on the job. Harbingers weren't known for their happy-go-lucky personalities, and he was just glad that he wasn't within earshot of the beast, as he said.
"Damn it. We'd best get up there. Moon won't thank us if he gets robbed again."
He found it odd when the chief had informed him he was dead, and even odder when he told him that there were only two responsibilities of a death patrol officer. One was obviously caring for the dead. The second was always making sure the moon rose at midnight, on the dot, for the sun was a non-existent absence, a thing reserved for the living, and there was no such thing as warmth to a non-beaten heart, so Hank didn't miss it.
You'd think it would fight for itself.
Saul had that look in his eye, the one that made Hank want to smack him senseless.
Moonlight is our only sustenance, fool, so shut your mouth and get moving.
Hank led them past the men in gray gowns, past the blue-faced priest who was holding a dead chicken in his hands, ducked under the yellow perimeter tape, and back out into the street.
We ignoring the serial killer?
Saul asked.
We ain't ignoring shit, and he ain't a serial killer until he's murdered again.
Hank pulled his peaked hat low as the icy rain pervaded every dying sense left in his brain. He hated winter, which was eternal in the land of the dead, so he always hated everything, and that suited him just fine.
You're the boss, boss,
said Saul, slipping into the passenger seat. Hank hit the siren and blared off away from the sidewalk. The car skidded round the corner, narrowly avoiding hitting an old woman crossing the street. It didn't do well to maul innocent civilians in car accidents, but you couldn't kill a dead thing with mundane trivialities like getting hit by a police car. No, you had to use enchanted weapons to murder in the land of the dead, and they weren't exactly easy to come by. They raced through the winding streets of the nameless city, the lights spilling by in a dreary haze, the storm clouds throwing everything into a darker shade of gray than usual. Lonely mountains surrounded the west and northern parts of the city, with the thick forest to the south and east. No one escaped, ever, as the harbingers crept in the abyss that was outside, awaiting their chance to suck your soul, entrapped in an ethereal asylum forever. He shuddered as they came to the edge of the city and crossed the bridge, dark water streaming past beneath. Hank turned off the horn and pushed down on the throttle, the car's engine roaring to life as they kicked out and drifted around Devil's Bend, a drop of more than 1,000 feet on the opposite side of a thin steel barrier. The figures were soon visible atop the mountainside. Outlined by moon, the thieves turned at the approaching headlights, eyes red as luminescent blood, faces pale as a drowned babe. Hank jammed down on the brakes 10 feet from the nearest moonlit thief, who was sifting the last bit of moonlight inside of a large jar which glowed once filled. Hank stuck his pistol out of the window, aiming. His bullet caught the creature in the face, ripping open his jaw, spurting congealed blood across the jar still held in its hands and making it glow like pink jelly. The gang of mutants leapt towards the car. The jars dropped, one smashing and wafting mist light into the night. Instantly, a sliver of moon reappeared. Saul was a decent shot, each one of his 5 bullets finding a mark, the last one smashing into a mutant's knee and making it crawl away.
Damn fiends! Spat Hank. You think they'd stick to the Evermarshes? Bloody fools never learn.
He stomped on the injured mutant's head, crushing in its fetid brain.
At least they didn't get away this time,
said Saul. Hank grimaced. He only too well remembered the time when they had turned up too late and the nameless city had gone without moonlight for days. The scream still haunted him. They released the last of moon back into the sky, where it took its rightful place, high above. Moon couldn't talk, but was sentient, no doubt, and seemed to be pleased by their actions. Hank tipped his hat to Moon, and then headed back towards the car. The radio static droned once more. A body had turned up on the docks with a spearhead through its heart. The spearhead, it turns out, had been enchanted. Hank fixed Saul with a glare.
Don't even say it.
Saul let I told you so hang in the air, unsaid. The body was bloated beyond recognition, but the spearhead, on further inspection, had an engraving on the bottom. Hank pulled the metal object out of the body's chest cavity and sighed.
You know where we need to take this, don't you?
He tossed over his shoulder.
Vanessa?
Saul cringed.
I just hope she forgives us.
You fucking too,
spat Vanessa. Her two different colored eyes glared at them both, her fists banging against the countertop.
We missed you too.
Hank sauntered up to the counter.
How about a kiss?
Fuck you, Hank. I lost a grade A demon's heart because of you.
We really didn't know the demon was looking for it,
began Saul. Hank held up his hand, silencing him.
We didn't come here to settle old scores.
Hank took out and tossed the spearhead into the air. Vanessa caught it and then put it to her eye in one fluid motion.
It's Trillium.
Hank nodded.
This is the third weapon this week. We think it's the same guy.
Hank looked across at Saul, who was still stood in the doorway.
Or girl,
said Saul.
This is expertly crafted.
Vanessa cooed over the spearhead.
Where exactly?
Asked Hank.
Could be Vargas. Could be the pont.
She muttered more to herself, and Hank led her. Vanessa was the woman to talk to about the illegal doings in the nameless city.
But I would recognize their mark. Each one is unique, mind you, so they don't attract attention. But they both possess a landmark hand. This, I do not know who crafted it.
Hank sighed. He'd been expecting as much.
So we're up Ship Creek without a paddle,
said Saul, entering and shutting out the storm behind them.
Guess so,
smiled Vanessa sadly.
But can I keep this?
She held up the spearhead.
Why not? I don't think our bloated compadre will miss it,
nodded Hank.
I do know someone who might know more.
Vanessa shook her head after a moment's hesitation.
No, he'll never talk to cops.
Who?
Hank noted the interest in his tone and had to check himself.
Spider.
Vanessa hooded her eyes, trying to recall some memory or other, it seemed.
I could tingle the web, see if he stirs.
At what cost? Asked Hank.
Your 13th sin, never confessed?
Vanessa haggled.
Or your second love, twice denied?
My only love in this world is you, Vanessa.
It was Hank's turn to smile.
And I have more sin in me than I'd care to recollect. You're welcome to it,
he said, and at Vanessa's eager expression, he grimaced.
Will it hurt as bad as last time?
You know it.
She took out a spine-looking instrument, all twist and bone, and stuck the sharp end into Hank's right ear. The pain was mind-splitting, but gone after a moment.
There. That wasn't so bad, was it?
She pinched his cheek. Hank looked tiredly at Saul, who looked like throwing up at any moment. Soul-sucking wasn't everyone's forte, it seemed.
Let us know when you locate this spider.
Hank tipped his hat to Vanessa, then led them outside. Outside, Saul huddled into his overcoat, rain pelting down hard against them as they made their way back to the car, and Hank saw the uneasy expression on his face.
What?
He snarled after they'd gotten in.
You keep selling pieces of your soul like they're worth nothing,
reprimanded Saul.
Well, it's my soul to forsake, ain't it?
Silence was his only answer. Back at the station, Hank was just dozing off when movement brought him back to the land of the unliving. He looked up and saw the chief circling his office like some starved buzzard. Saul was asleep on his desk and Hank slammed his fist against the surface, waking the man.
Come on, I think we're in trouble.
Just as he said it, the chief opened his office door and waved at them to enter.
You're in deep shit, growled the chief. I thought I smelled an odor.
Hank frowned.
You've been showering again, Saul.
This is no damn time for jokes,
shouted the chief.
3 dead within a week. All enchanted killings of the same origin.
We have a lead.
You don't have shit,
hissed the chief, his pale face growing paler.
You find this fucker before he turns up another corpse, or it's your asses on the line.
They left the precinct to the watchful stares of a harbinger, which gave a hissing laugh as they passed. Outside, Hank climbed inside of the car and sighed. He was tired of the grind, the never-ending pile of shit that was eternity. Had he been so bad to be cursed to inhabit limbo forever? Nothing but memories floated through his mind, the ones he hadn't sold yet for a sip of whiskey at least. Yes, he had been a crooked cop, but hadn't everyone been on the take? He guessed that's why there wasn't a shortage of boots on the ground in the nameless city. He turned the ignition and let the road blur past. Saul's silence stretched out just as long as the face he was wearing.
What?
He growled, looking sideways at his partner.
I don't like it.
Like what?
I don't like being so close to the wood chipper. If we don't figure out who's turning up these double dead corpses, then we're food for the harbingers.
Hank shuddered.
You're always worrying.
And I noticed the smell of whiskey on your breath this morning.
So?
So, one day you'll wake up and not remember who you are. The last shred of your identity sold for a drop of devil's blood.
Always with the dramatics, eh, Saul?
Hank huffed, but he knew the man was right. Hank was hurtling towards oblivion. A one-way dash to who knew where you went when the Harbinger swallowed you whole. Saul remained tight-lipped as he dropped him off at his apartment. Hank nodded goodbye, then headed towards his own rat-infested home. Cockroaches skittered here and there as he climbed the steps, entering the bare Spartan residence he had called his place of haunting these past centuries. He sighed deeply as he opened the fridge. Something furry sat on the second shelf, and as it tried to skimp away into the darkness, Hank's hand shot out and grabbed it. He chewed down on the rat's head, crunching the skull with his molars, sipping at the cold blood like a delicacy. After all, it's not like he could die from disease or starvation for that matter, and on that note he tossed the rat into a bin and sat down on the couch. Outside, the storm still raged, the light barely creeping in through the shades. How he missed being alive. But he was doomed, forever to dwell in this nightmarish hinterland, and there was no escaping for him. Happy endings only happened in storybooks, and his was a tale of horror. He sensed movement. Cracking open an eye, he reached for his revolver. But a shape sat in the armchair made him falter. He sat up instead and switched on the lamp, but the shape had vanished. He shivered then, colder than usual, and felt something tickle his arm. Looking down, there was a spider. It looked up at him.
My master wishes to speak with you,
it hissed. Hank jumped, swatting away the insect, and leapt out of bed. The spider climbed his pillow.
Do not attempt to hurt me again.
The spider held an edge in its tone.
My master would not appreciate it.
Who's your master?
Hank knew the answer before he heard the spider's words.
Your master is Spider? The one Vanessa told us about?
Hank asked the insect.
The witch has made a pact with my master. A year's worth of tears, given at will, for his aid in your investigation.
It doesn't sound like Vanessa to part with something for nothing.
Hank felt uneasy, feeling the space opening up beneath him.
What's her end? What's she to gain for helping me?
The witch has her own plans,
hissed the spider.
My master wants you to meet him at dusk at the highest tower in the city.
Why not meet me here?
Because my master must take precautions. Many eyes watching.
Eyes? Whose eyes?
The spider jumped then, landing on the windowsill, and before Hank could shut it, it leapt out the window, disappearing into darkness. Hank filled Saul in about his midnight visitor and their rendezvous with Spider.
A talking spider? You sure you didn't dream it?
Saul raised an eyebrow.
Do I look like the imaginative kind?
Hank growled. Later that morning, a call came in. A bus full of old people had gone missing, which of course wasn't unusual in the nameless city, for ghouls and ghosts lay under every nook and cranny. But this so happened to be a bus full of fresh meat, what the citizens of the city called those only newly acquired to the afterlife. So Hank and Saul were the tenderfoots put onto the case, and Hank couldn't help but feel a smidge of relief being put onto fresh tracks and not bumping his head against the reinforced window pane that was what the citizenry were naming the Dockside Killer. Only one of the murders had been on the docks, but try telling the delinquents that. They pulled up to the last place where the bus had been seen and canvassed the area. They hit the jackpot in the gray brick building, as an old woman had been peering out the window at the exact moment the bus had been taken.
They were horrid creatures,
the roomy-eyed woman was saying.
Gray, spiky hair, leather aprons, meat cleavers, and leather masks.
She shuddered, and Hank knew what Saul's horrified glance meant. They were the Butchers, the worst gang of ghouls in the nameless city, and had been wanted for centuries. They were also behind the matter of the death of Hank's old partner, and Hank had a score to settle. They switched on the radio and listened for any sighting of a bus full of bones, for the Butchers would use enchanted cleavers to eat the bodies. But no sign of the bus was forthcoming.
I think we better ask this spider if he knows where the Butchers hide out, not just who this Dockside Killer might be,
said Saul, reading Hank's thoughts. Hank nodded, switching on the siren. And as the dusk settled over the city, they roared onwards to the skylight, the highest tower in the nameless city. The elevator grinded to a halt, and Hank and Saul exited onto the top floor of the skylight. They were greeted by a shadowed face behind a mask. The masked figure took their names and nodded, and then guided them through a maze of twists and turns.
I don't like this,
whispered Saul, once the figure was out of earshot.
Just keep your mouth shut and your eyes open,
Hank shot back. Passing down a longer corridor, they came to one of many doorways, and the figure rapped on the door gently before turning and striding away. The door silently swung inwards, and they entered a richly decorated room, velvet chairs and a chandelier hanging above. The door shut with a startling bang behind them.
Friend or foe?
A voice spoke from the dark recess at the back of the room. It was but a whisper, but traveled far without strain.
Vanessa sent us,
said Hank, not liking the scene one bit. He rested his hand on his revolver and saw Saul doing the same.
The she-witch sends spies into my domain.
The voice took on a menacing tone, and Hank had to force his hand away from the weapon.
We are her friends, I think. Why don't you show yourself? We've nothing to hide.
Hank felt surprised at how even his tone was. The shadows in the recess stirred, and what materialized before them Hank could only describe as monstrous. It had elongated limbs, eight of them, with inky black eyes full of hunger.
So wait, Jesus fucking Christ!
Saul went to draw his weapon, but Hank held out his hand, stopping him.
We mean you no harm,
Hank said, noticing the malice rising in the creature's expression. He took out and placed his revolver on the floor, then took a step closer to it.
We need information.
The creature sniffed at the air.
A bargain, then?
Asked the spider.
If you will,
nodded Hank.
Hank?
Saul shook his head.
Sure, we can bargain.
Hank held out a hand and spat in it. Spider crept 2 paces closer, its long limbs closing the distance with ease.
You possess nothing of value,
hissed Spider, turning away. Then it stopped, tilting its head sideways, listening. Spider turned back to them, brushing past Hank at speed and making Saul gasp as it closed its fangs shut, inches away from his face.
Your eyes,
said Spider.
Don't you have enough of them?
Saul asked, and he had a point, as the creature had a dozen.
Not for keeping, but for weeping.
Spider seemed to smile then, and Saul gave a shriek as it nipped at the air before his face.
I cannot mourn my lost children, for I do not possess a human heart. Give me the ability to grieve, and you shall have your information.
But that's impossible,
snapped Hank.
Nothing given, nothing taken. Leave now and be forever forsaken.
Spider let out a low cackle, making the hairs on the back of Hank's neck stand on end.
I'll do it,
nodded Saul.
A pact sealed in blood and bone.
Spider moaned, rocking back on its legs.
Give me what I truly own.
Wait!
Hank took a step, but it was too late. Spider bit into Saul's throat, ripping at the flesh, drinking his blood. And the man began to scream. Hank went to grab Spider, but it shot out one of its legs and knocked him across the room.
Why, you fucking piece of vermin!
He growled, jumping and grabbing hold of his revolver. He stuck it to the back of Spider's head.
Give me a fucking reason!
Spider ignored him, instead sucking up Saul's tears with its outstretched mandibles. And the man was livid, shouting and thrashing about, but held steady in Spider's grip. Suddenly, Spider released its grip, just as Hank pulled back on the hammer of his revolver. Saul sank to the floor, looking like a pile of skin-laden bones.
You try anything like that again, and I'll blow out your brains,
Hank promised.
The bargain is struck.
Spider turned and fled back into the dark recess. It let out a shrill moan like glass peeling against nails.
Leave me to gather your information. Return at midnight, and you shall gain what you wish to know.
But we haven't even told you what we want to know,
Hank protested. Spider sobbed once again.
Leave me before I change my mind.
Hank didn't feel like pushing his luck, so he grabbed Saul by the shoulder and hauled ass out of Dodge. Hank sat alone at the bar, trying in vain to ignore the festive music playing in the background. He really hated Christmas, as it was when he had died, or so he distantly recalled riding down somewhere, because he had sold that memory for a bottle of bourbon about 2 weeks fresh off the bone ship. He shuddered at the thought of those bleached bone barges, ferrying souls to the nameless city, but never from. He couldn't help but think of Saul, of his haunted expression on the drive back to his apartment.
You get used to it,
Hank had told him.
It felt cold, like shards of ice clawing their way through my soul.
Saul shuddered. Hank tipped the glass back and let the whiskey flow down his throat. The old burn was still there, at least, like an old friend. The warmth that used to buzz in his stomach, though, had long faded, like an old photograph. He needed to quit while he was ahead. Saul's words floated through his mind and stopped selling pieces of himself like old jigsaw puzzle pieces. Back at his apartment, he checked the fridge, more out of habit than hunger, because he was always hungry now, but for what he couldn't say. Not even a rat waited for him, the fridge empty, and he shut it, then crawled into bed. His dreams consisted of nightmares most nights, with unhinged deliriums on others. This night, though, he dreamt of a large spider sucking Saul's blood and tears until it had bled him dry, and nothing but an empty husk of a soul remained. He awoke to a full moon in the sky. He felt something crawling across his face and swiped it off. Turning on the lamp, Hank saw it was the spider from before, or guessed it was because it had a look of offended pride on its face.
"You should really stop doing that," said the spider. "My master has the information you requested."
"Good. Took him long enough," said Hank, sitting up.
"The butchers are in a warehouse in the eastern ghetto. What you might call the Heights."
Hank sighed.
"Great. What about this dockside killer? He know who it might be?"
"He does not possess a name. But an alias of Ghost got caught in my master's web, and he thinks the two are linked."
"Is that all? Two shitty bits of information for a piece of a man's soul, huh?"
"It was a bargain struck."
The spider sounded taken aback and seemed to hesitate.
"I will confer with my master about your unhappiness with the deal."
No. Just tell him. Thanks, I guess."
"Very well, then."
And without another word, it turned and scuttled away into the dark interior of the apartment. Hank got up and got dressed, then pulled up outside Saul's apartment. It was climbing the stairs that he passed a man in a dark leather apron, weapons jingling noisily from inside his black overcoat. A butcher. Hank let the man pass by unhindered and pulled out his revolver, pulling back the hammer. The man turned, swiped open his overcoat, revealing a multitude of weapons beneath. The butcher grabbed two cleavers from his belt and came screaming at Hank, who took time to aim, his bullet blasting the butcher's knee into bloody pieces. The butcher dropped the cleavers, and Hank took a wary step closer, revolver trained on the butcher's face. While it wouldn't kill him, a blast to the face would at least knock him out.
"Don't!"
gasped the butcher.
"What are you doing here?"
snarled Hank.
"The boss told me to wait for you, and to come back with your severed head, or Noel!"
The butcher looked at the two cleavers. Hank, on further inspection, saw that both weapons were enchanted.
"Who gave you these?"
The butcher smiled and then drew a knife from his sleeve, slitting open his throat in one fluid swipe. Hank watched, eyes locked onto the butcher's, but he thought he had seen a shred of fear in the man's eyes, from death or something else, though. Hank put his thoughts behind him and hurried up the stairs. Saul was thankfully unaware of the butcher's presence, and Hank found him curled up on the couch.
"Wake up!"
shouted Hank, startling Saul awake. Saul saw the blood specks on Hank's clothes.
"What happened?"
"You mean besides a butcher showing up just outside and trying to flay me dead?"
Hank snarled and felt bad because his anger shouldn't have been directed towards his partner in crime. But anger has a funny way of showing up where it's not wanted.
"Come on, we need to get to the ghetto. It's where the butchers are holed up. And I think they may know more about this ghost."
The ghetto was a large chunk of warehouses and tenements on the eastern side of the city, and the death patrol normally didn't go in there with less than three or four squads. But sometimes a man must do what a man must do. And if Hank wanted to find out more about this ghost alias and what it had in connection with the Dockside Killer, it was something best done with one or two steady sets of hands. Saul sat low in the passenger seat, his five-shooter already in hand, just in case they bumped into some unforeseen circumstances. But Hank knew this city like the back of his hand, and soon they were gliding through the warehouses, looking for some tell of where the butchers might be holed up. It was passing one of the warehouses when a familiar spider appeared on the dash.
"That's the one,"
it said, and Saul let out a bark of alarm.
"Holy shit, you weren't lying!"
Saul went to butt the spider with his pistol, but at the insect's hiss of warning, thought better of it.
"You sure?"
asked Hank. The spider nodded.
"Okay, then."
Hank stopped the car down the street. They both filed out of the car and crept up the side of the warehouse. Then, glancing through a hole in the fence, a bus was parked in the yard behind the warehouse.
"You think that's the bus the old people got kidnapped in?"
asked Saul.
"I'd bet my soul on it,"
muttered Hank, drawing his revolver. They crept around to the front of the warehouse, where a trio of men loaded crates into the back of a truck.
"Follow my lead,"
Hank said, holstering his revolver. He approached the trio, waving.
"Help you, sir?"
asked the one with the crooked nose. He seemed to be in charge.
"Warehouse inspection,"
said Hank, taking out his badge and showing it to him briefly, not giving them enough time to read "Death Patrol" scribed across the bottom.
"You sure you want to do that?"
asked one of the other men, a lad of barely 18 with a shock of white hair.
"That time of the year, ain't it?"
asked Saul. The crooked-nosed man sighed, taking out an envelope from inside his coat, offering it to Hank. Hank took the envelope and opened it, seeing a row of vials inside filled with green liquid. Stoppered souls. Hank drew his revolver with one hand and slipped the envelope inside his coat with the other.
"Now we really need to see the inside of this warehouse."
"Your funeral,"
said the crooked-nosed man. He led them to the warehouse, and that's when all hell broke loose. Shots blasted through the front windows, one missing Hank's face by a hand's breadth. Hank dived, grabbed the crooked-nosed man, and used him as a shield. He returned fire, his third shot finding the mark, and screams came from inside the warehouse. Saul didn't need telling, kicking in the front door and running inside. Hank was right behind them, and inside they found a butcher holding his face, congealed blood smudging between his fingers.
"You bastards,"
the man growled, eyes trained on Saul's pistol.
"Where are they?"
Hank asked the butcher, pointing the revolver against the butcher's forehead.
"Inside."
The butcher seemed to smile but couldn't without his jaw, which he was picking up from the ground and holding against the open maw, which now was his mouth, tongue flapping loosely. Hank found the old-timers inside, bodies being dissolved in vats of acid.
"No wonder they had these,"
Hank said, taking back out the vials of stoppered souls. Saul turned and vomited, and Hank couldn't blame him, as the odor was horrendous. It took a special kind of evil to prey on fresh meat, those only off the bone ships. But then he guessed the nameless city wasn't exactly short on evildoers. Even city officials were known to partake in drinking the horrid vials of stoppered souls. When you could stitch your soul back together with little pieces of someone else's, then selling parts of yourself became not such an inconvenience. Hank had thought about using the liquid himself on a dozen different occasions, but he wasn't that evil, he guessed.
"Well, we'd best call this in,"
said Saul. Hank noticed an enchanted cleaver lying on the table and picked it up.
"Not until we get what we came for,"
said Hank, returning to the injured butcher, whose jaw was slowly reattaching together.
"Where's your boss?" "I'll never tell."
Hank chopped the cleaver into the butcher's leg, tearing the foot and tendon apart.
"I'll take you apart," piece by piece.
Hank hissed into the butcher's face, holding the cleaver's edge against the man's face. The foot was a useless hunk of meat now, and wouldn't reattach itself like the jawbone had done. One bonus of using enchanted weapons.
Okay, shit,
growled the butcher. And then he told Hank where to find his boss.
You're lying,
Hank spat, blinking.
Why would I lie?
Hank bit the cleaver into the man's fingers, taking off three of them.
I'm not lying,
screamed the butcher.
Huh,
said Hank, and stuck the cleaver into his belt.
You're sure he's telling the truth?
Saul asked as they made their way back to the car.
Why wouldn't he?
But the chief.
And Hank had to admit that it felt crooked in his mind. The chief always seemed like a straight shooter, but then stoppered souls had a way of corrupting even the soundest seeming souls.
I don't like it neither,
said Hank.
But we'd best keep this between us until we know for sure.
Saul nodded. They made their way back to the station. Hank knocked on the chief's office door and was told to enter.
Found him in a warehouse in the ghetto,
said Hank, after handing in the vials of stoppered souls. The chief nodded.
Good work. Did you call it in? Yeah. What about this dockside killer? Any leads? Some. Nothing solid yet, but it's only a matter of time. Well, at least we won't have anyone preying on fresh meat for a time. Good work, Hank. Keep it up. Thanks, Chief.
Hank left the station, rejoining Saul in the car.
What now?
We wait.
So they waited. The chief left the precinct alone and entered his car. They followed him three car lengths away as he made quick progress through the avenues of the city. And soon they pulled up outside a familiar shop.
What in the world?
Muttered Saul as the chief entered Vanessa's shop. The she-witch flipped the sign on the door to closed.
She couldn't be a part of this, could she?
Hell knows,
said Hank. They climbed out of the car and approached the shop. Looking in through the window, there was no sign of either the chief or Vanessa. Around back, Hank smashed the window of the door and opened it from the inside. They entered, and passing through a corridor, they opened a large metal door, finding the chief wired up to a machine, which was pumping the stoppered souls into his brain via a sharp funnel sticking into the back of his skull.
I really wish you both hadn't come.
Hank turned to find Vanessa pointing a pump-action shotgun at him.
How long you been working for the butchers?
The witch smiled, her yellow eye twitching.
You really don't have a clue, do you?
She laughed. Saul took a step to the side and she followed him with the shotgun.
Don't fucking move.
What's the chief promised you?
Asked Saul.
We can double it.
You think you have something worth more than a ticket out of here?
She frowned, as if she had said too much.
Out of here?
Asked Hank.
No one gets out of the nameless city, Toots. There's nowhere to go.
Hell's gotta be better than this shithole.
Vanessa pumped the shotgun, and Hank dove to one side as a blast hit the wall where he had been standing. He dove down behind the metal counter, aiming his revolver blindly over the counter's edge, letting off three shots. Saul was nowhere to be seen, and looking around, he noticed the chief's eyes had opened.
She's gone,
said Saul, and glancing over the counter, he saw he was right. Vanessa had vanished. Saul was aiming his gun at the chief, and Hank walked up and pulled out the funnel from the old man's skull. The chief blinked as if coming out of some daze. Looking up at Hank, his face drained of the little blood left in the soul sucker's body.
You better have an explanation for yourselves,
began the chief, trying to sound enraged, but that was easier said than done since he was still half lucid from the stoppered souls. Hank placed the revolver's barrel against the chief's forehead.
How long you been working with the butchers?
The chief sighed.
You know. Of course we know. The Stoppard Souls was just bait. So what's Vanessa got to do with it?
Hank pulled back on the hammer of his gun.
You better start talking. She's the ghost.
What?
Asked Saul, but Hank felt the penny drop.
She's been the one leaving bodies festering about the city.
The chief nodded.
She told me she'd let me use this contraption if I turned a blind eye.
So, you're a soul sucker?
Saul looked horrified.
Isn't it obvious?
Said the chief. It was Hank's turn to frown.
The whole precinct's in her pocket, except you two, of course. The Untouchables, we call you.
Well then, if we can't trust anyone,
said Hank, putting the revolver back in its holster,
then we'd best keep a low profile.
I can help you,
began the chief, hope rising in his eyes. It made Hank's stomach churn, as he hadn't seen that expression for a long time, especially not in a mirror. Hank took the cleaver out of his belt.
Sorry, chief. Nothing personal.
And he slammed the blade down, splitting open the chief's skull. He let the handle go, the cleaver embedded in the chief's head. The man dropped to the floor, and Hank noted the green liquid gushing from the chief's skull. Saul looked aghast.
You killed him,
he whispered.
We can't trust anyone,
said Hank, placing his hand on Saul's shoulder.
It's just us now. Me and you, against the whole city.
Saul smiled.
Wasn't it always?
So Vanessa was the dockside killer, after all the time he had spent knowing her. For almost 2 centuries, he had called her not exactly a friend, as Hank hadn't room in his empty chamber of a heart for companionship, but she had become a placid presence. It was the following day the APB came out, looking for Hank and Saul, saying they had murdered the chief in cold blood, as if blood wasn't always cold in the nameless city. Vanessa must have informed the precinct of their doings. It made things slightly harder, as now they couldn't put on pretenses of ignorance at the precinct. Also, there was the matter of the now limited resources, where only days before they had had the whole city's police force backing them up. So be it, they were rogues, but honest ones. Well, as honest as the crooked city could muster. They kept a low profile, and it was their old friend Spider who found them first. The insect appeared in their hideout, hanging from a doorframe.
I have news,
the spider told them.
This better be good,
Saul said. He hadn't slept in 2 days and was jittery as a June bug.
Your ghost has taken refuge with the butchers and is making them a new type of weapon.
The spider seemed to smile.
Enchanted bullets.
And I guess your master wants something in return for her whereabouts.
The spider shook its head.
My master doesn't take kindly to people stirring up the hornet's nest.
It shuddered.
My master is quite displeased with this ghost's doings and wants the nameless city to be rid of her.
Easier said than done,
Hank told the insect.
You shall have aid,
said the spider.
Eyes and ears throughout the city, insect messengers, and a squad of 6 killers for hire.
Killers for hire?
Hank couldn't help the scorn in his voice. Goons were nefariously disloyal.
Yes,
hissed the spider.
They will be here within the hour. Prepare yourselves to kill this ghost. And if you are successful, my master will be eternally grateful.
Great, sighed Saul. How many butchers are guarding her?
The spider hesitated.
We do not know exactly, but they are holed up in the tenements in the ghetto.
So we just waltz into their stronghold, with nothing more than a team of snakes backing us up?
Hank frowned.
How do we know these killers for hire won't turncoat and play for the other team?
My master is a more sinister creature than these underlings.
The spider sounded sure of itself, and Hank thought back to the long-limbed master of insects and couldn't help but agree.
Fine, we'll lead your killers into this fight, but we do this for your master, and he pulls some strings in his webs to get us back on the police force. I know Spider is worth a fortune, and he can grease some palms for us.
Hank folded his arms, waiting for a rebuttal, but the insect nodded.
I'm sure my master would find this arrangement agreeable.
The arachnid disappeared back into the dark interior of the room and was gone.
You trust this spider not to fuck us?
Saul asked Hank, who could only shrug.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend, as they say.
The killers for hire were a silent bunch. They knocked on the door, and answering it, they all wore gray boiler suits, with black balaclavas covering their faces. But their eyes weren't human, and Hank was sure that beneath the mask were inhuman features. He didn't mind, as long as they could shoot straight. They loaded into the back of a van behind the warehouse, and soon were underway, headed once again to the eastern boundary of the ghetto. On each killer's belt was a long dagger, and Hank could see these were enchanted. They would have to get in close to use them, but they seemed like they were useful in a fight. Each one's movements were very agile. Every gesture or action they performed was purposeful, and Hank felt glad to have some backup. They came to a stop around the corner of a red warehouse. Looking out the side window, he saw butchers crammed around the front of the building. About a dozen of them, all wearing long leather overcoats, beneath which no doubt bristled with enchanted weapons. It seemed Vanessa, or Ghost as she now called herself, had been busy crafting an armory for the gang. The van door opened and they all jumped out, Hank and Saul leading the group around the corner. And the butchers noticed the attack, brandishing cleavers and long, jagged blades. Hank's first shot ripped open the closest butcher's skull, and his next one hit the fucker in the throat. They bled onto the ground, thrashing around, clutching at their wounds, which would soon heal, but they were out of the fight for now. The killers for hire let off shots of their own, all marksmen it seemed, and the butchers were soon riddled with bullet holes. Red congealed blood leaking like scarlet pus onto the pavement. It was then they heard the sirens as six or seven patrol cars came screeching around the corner and came to a halt outside the warehouse.
Get the fuck inside,
hissed one of the killers for hire. A rogue bullet being shot from the patrol cars hit it in the forehead, blasting back the creature, and it collapsed onto the ground, smoke wafting from the open wound.
Enchanted bullets,
Hank muttered to himself, and he turned and ran after Saul. Inside the warehouse, the killers for hire were making quick work of the butchers defending the building. Their enchanted daggers ripped through flesh and bone, leaving bodies in their wake, and Hank sidestepped over the discarded limbs strewn here or there, following Saul into the large docking station, where Vanessa was waiting for them. In her hand, she held a Tommy gun, and around her were about a dozen butchers, each one training a shotgun at the attackers.
Shit!
Hank cursed.
You're outmanned and outgunned. Throw down your weapons,
ordered Vanessa. The killers for hire hesitated, and Hank knew they were walking a thin rope over sheer mutiny. That's when there was movement behind Vanessa. The large insect-like creature crawled out from inside of a crate, which one of the butchers had opened with a crowbar. The insect seemed to thank the butcher for his aid by ripping off his head, blood spurting up into the air. Vanessa turned and let the Tommy gun fire, bullets tearing into the insect, green goo being blasted this way and that. But more insects were appearing from corners and dark edifices, attacking the butchers, enchanted bullets doing little to halt the tide of horror that was Hank Xavier's. Hank snatched an enchanted dagger from one of the fallen killers for hire, running towards Vanessa. She seemed to sense the danger and turned on him, Tommy gun trained, barrel smoking, and the trigger clicked inwards as something bashed against the side of Hank, knocking him off balance. He looked up and saw Saul standing where he had stood, and Vanessa opened fire, bullets ripping through his partner's body like metal
No!
Hank screamed, crawling over to the blood-caked figure, gripping Saul's head in his hands. The man smiled up at him.
It's fine, Hank. I'm...
But what he wanted to say, Hank would never know, as smoke wafted up from a dozen bullet holes. Saul's eyes faded, lost in the abyss, and he knelt over his dead comrade, anger welling up inside him. Looking around, he saw the insect army was still entangled in a fight with the butchers. Vanessa was distracted, ripping open a gigantic cockroach's shell and redecorating the wall with green goo. Hank gripped the blade tight in his fist and ran, but the woman turned just in time, and the smoking barrel was aimed right at him. But when she pulled the trigger, something white shot out of nowhere, wrapping itself around the Tommy gun and pulling it from Vanessa's hands. Hank looked but couldn't see what had aided him, but didn't think twice as he closed the distance between them. Vanessa pulled two enchanted blades from her belt. He swiped his blade at her face, but she ducked aside, bringing her weapon around, slicing into the side of his head. The pain was excruciating. He found himself on the floor, staring up at Vanessa, who smiled as she readied her weapons for the finishing blow.
You were always in my way. Always too wary. Always too alert to be taken out. But I knew this day would come, and I'm glad I get to look into your eyes as I...
A bullet ripped through her throat then, and she clawed at the blood leaking out, her eyes wide with panic. She dropped to the floor, gasping, and her death throes soon fell still. He glanced around, and Saul was gripping an enchanted pistol. The man nodded at him, before slumping to the ground, his eyes drooping. Green liquid gushed out from his open mouth, and Hank approached, seeing a vial of stoppered souls gripped in Saul's other hand. His partner had been a soul sucker, it seemed, having cheated a final death, if only for a moment, but living long enough to have saved his life. Hank closed Saul's eyes and sighed. The gun salute rang out through the wintry air, rifles spitting lead up into the sky, and a lone coffin was placed onto the barge. Hank watched with a sense of grief welling up in his chest as Saul's coffin floated into the mist, headed for the unknown tides of the eternal sea. An ancient man approached him, face wrinkled to confusion, the weathered skin creasing up as the man tried to smile.
"So you're the new chief?"
asked Hank.
"Yes,"
nodded the officer.
"Things are going to change around here, and I need someone like you at my side. I'm promoting you to Detective Sergeant."
The statement felt more like an order than request, and Hank could only blink at the new chief.
"I thank you, but I'd rather keep my ear to the street, and I'd have a hard time doing that pushing paper all day."
Hank turned and went to walk away, but the chief's hand shot out.
"You'll be heading a new division. The Untouchables, we're calling it. In memory of your old partner. What will I be doing exactly, if not pushing papers? You'll be ridding the city of the dirt that's riddled throughout. Isn't that what you wanted?"
Hank nodded.
perhaps. Let me think on it.
Take your time,
said the chief, turning and walking away, leaving Hank alone. He sat in his usual bar sipping at whiskey. It was Christmas Day, and Hank felt more depressed looking at the sparkling lights than could be thought possible. He knocked back the whiskey and sold a shred of his soul for another tot of spirits.
You need company?
A voice asked, and turning, Hank found the spider hanging from the ceiling.
No.
My master requested your presence.
The spider seemed to sniff at the air.
Your soul seems troubled. Perhaps my master could help.
My soul is damned,
Hank muttered into his drink.
Aren't all souls in the nameless city?
Huh.
My master wishes you to meet him at the skylight at midnight.
For what exactly?
The spider hesitated.
He wishes you to work for him. He has been impressed by your actions thus far.
Tell him I'll be there. Now piss off.
As you wish.
And the spider left Hank staring at the wall, wondering what in the world working for the insect's master might entail. The elevator grinded to a halt, and the masked figure from before led Hank through a maze of corridors, coming to and knocking on one of the 100 metal doors. The door swung inwards, and Hank entered. The spider was visible this time, standing, if you could call it that, against the railing, looking over the nameless city below. Snow had begun to fall, and Hank huddled into his coat.
So your partner died?
Spider asked. Hank nodded.
This is something I do not understand, Death. My kind do not live in the sense that you humans do.
And what is your kind exactly?
We are weavers of fortune, spinners of souls, and gamblers of the highest fashion.
Silence passed between them for a moment.
I want you to work for me.
Doing what?
I need an agent. Someone I can trust to gather intelligence on the soul suckers around the city. It seems a new phantom has risen from the mists. A ghoul of rather high intellect, and has garnered the support of many of my associates. I fear he is gaining too much power for my liking.
And what do I get in return?
Your soul, whole as ever. And a pass to the other side.
Hank thought about it.
The other side?
The words felt like poison to his mouth.
Isn't that what all you humans desire?
Hank shook his head.
I'm a cop, not a spy. I'm afraid you'll have to look elsewhere.
After a moment's silence, Spider hissed, jumping forwards, 8 spiked limbs flailing at him. Hank had anticipated the attack, his revolver already hidden in his coat pocket. He pulled down on the trigger. Enchanted bullets ripped into Spider's body. The monster fell back, letting out a blood-curdling scream, before dropping to the floor. And who said his kind couldn't be killed? Frank pulled the car up to the precinct and entered. Applause greeted him, but the faces were unknown, as the entire police force in the station had been locked away in cells and new recruits had been mustered. The new chief stood in the doorway and clapped him on the shoulder.
I'm glad you decided to take up my offer. I guess I'm a cop until the end of time, smiled Hank. This is your new partner, said the chief.
The man was thin but had sharp eyes. His face was gaunt, hungered, but his hand was steady in Hank's grip as they shook.
Name's Creed, said the detective.
Hank nodded.
Well, I guess we best get to it.
What's the plan, partner?
Creed asked, and Hank thought the man's smile looked real enough. They climbed inside the car, and Hank blared the siren, as Moon was once again being harassed by moonlight thieves. As the car roared along the gray avenues, Hank couldn't help but smile and think that this was who he was, until he died or hell froze over. He was a death patrol detective, and a fucking good one. And that was The Death Patrol by our old pal Rory Duane. A little about the author. Rory, also known as RCJ Duane, is an author living in the Midlands of Ireland. He's currently writing a young adult novel based on a dream he had, titled Del Vere, College of Dreams and Magic. You can check out his website at roryduaneart.wordpress.com. And you can find him on Facebook, YouTube, and Patreon as well. Thanks, Rory. Hey, by the way, you can find me on Patreon, too. How about for Christmas you come by and sign up? Just search Drew Blood on Patreon.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillinTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment. 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. A quick thanks to our first anonymous reviewer who says of the Splittail Files, the stories in this book are raunchy, filthy, and hilarious, and one hell of a great read. Jeff has created timeless characters that will forever stick out in your mind in a way that you just can't help but laugh. I want to thank both of these men for the endless good times I've had listening to these stories over and over again. Jeff and Drew, it's great to know there's others out there that have a sense of humor like mine. And thank you, anonymous reviewer. Cute kid in your photo there. All right, amigos, y'all get out there and write some reviews on the Splittail Files book. I want to read all of them, by God. And in the meantime, may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. Have a Merry Christmas, amigos. And as always, go fuck yourselves. Good night, amigos. Good night. Feliz Navidad, Happy Hanukkah, Merry Kwanzaa, all that shit.